Welcome to Sports and a Slice of Life. And now, here's your host, Dave Lewis.
How's it going? Thanks for stopping by to check in today. Coming up in just a moment, Bay Area Radio Hall of Fame broadcaster Dan Rusinowski of the San Jose Sharks, the team's broadcaster since 1991. No postseason this year, but still plenty to talk about, including, among other things, cooking. But first, a word from our sponsor. Recently becoming a coffee drinker and really turned on to the I'm Up Coffee Company. The difference is the quality. Roasted to order and shipped the same day. You can get ground and whole beans that are single origin and expert blends. I have the Sunrise Hike Roast Colombian from volcanic loam soil at altitude, which goes perfectly with a couple of pieces of dark chocolate. Order online. Use the promo code Dave Lewis to get 15% off your first order. The I'm Up Coffee Company. That's imupcoffee.com. Your favorite cup of coffee hasn't been roasted yet. And now, without further ado, Sharks broadcaster Dan Rusinowski. Always a rush to connect with the longtime voice of the San Jose Sharks, Dan Rusinowski, quarantined in the South Bay. How's it going?
Well, I'm like everybody else, Dave. I'm, sheltering in place. I'm not seeing people mostly. I'm washing my hands obsessively. Just another example of how Howard Hughes was ahead of his time once again.
How are you with the mask? Mask or no mask?
Well, obviously you don't like it, but it makes obvious sense to do it. And, you know, these are precautions that everybody should be doing voluntarily. Obviously, you shouldn't be forced to do it, but I think that it's a good thing to do. It's very prudent. And all of the things we're talking about, maintaining social distancing and, you know, following all the policies, seem to be doing the right thing. So that's what we'll do.
When the season had the plug pulled in March, did you think at that time, well, this will be a 30-day type thing, 45 days? Did you have any idea that it would escalate to the level at which it did?
No, I fully expected that it would, simply because of all of the people who are certainly a lot more qualified than I am to talk about it. The epidemiologists around the world discussing the morbidity and not so much the mortality rate, but the fact that this is something that really does spread very easily and quickly. And although there are easy ways to prevent that, the nature of human beings are that they are going to spread around. And of course, we have to look into all of those things. So I figured it would be something that would be taking a little bit longer. We can debate about the policies and the way that they've done that so far. But all in all, I think that it doesn't totally surprise me it was longer, but I really honestly didn't think it'd be this long.
Are you a little bit stir crazy by now?
Well, you find ways to get through all of that, right? After all, the travel that I do around the NHL and before that, the American Hockey League and college hockey, you're trapped in a pretty isolated place. In fact, without social distancing, I'm on an aircraft with a bunch of players flying around, and as luxurious and as wonderful as that is, you can get stir crazy doing that too. So this is no big deal that way.
And I guess you started cooking during this downtime, right? Become more adept at cooking?
Well, I don't know about started. My wife and I have always really enjoyed that. We like entertaining and we like having friends over and spending time that way. But in this case, why not take the opportunity to do things you don't have as much time to do during the course of a hockey season? It's one of the great things we get to do on the road when we travel is we get to enjoy nice meals at good restaurants, and we try to break those up so that it works within the budget. But I'd say that's something my wife and I have always enjoyed, and we just started putting it up there to share it with people, but also to remind people that you have to keep a smile on your face throughout all this. And in addition to that, with our experiences with the area restaurants, that you have to support local business to the best of your ability. And that's something that we're trying to do too, to publicize all those people that are working actually in a situation that puts them in somewhat of harm's way in regard to this COVID-19 pandemic. But also these are people that are small business people, what America is all about really. And we want to make sure we support them.
I saw a couple of articles with restaurants reopening, I think in Florida, where NBA players would leave like $1,000 tip for a $37 bill, you know, to really reinforce, hey, we're supporting the restaurants and the people that work there.
That's pretty nice of them to do that. And of course, we've heard a lot of other stories. Mark Zuckerberg doing some things with his favorite restaurants in Palo Alto, which I think is pretty amazing. And, whatever anybody can do, we've got a situation at the Shark Tank where there's a charitable arm that's going out to try to support the part-time workers and to help supplement some of their needs during the course of this time, and everybody's participated. So I think all of those things are good.
Do you have a go-to dish that you like? If Dan Rusnowski is going to blow away a visitor, what's the thing he's going to make that is going to be a guaranteed hit?
I don't know about blowing away anybody, but I just enjoyed cooking the Russian cuisine. I like making borscht. I like I really enjoy making a couple of the other recipes. One of them is a fish soup Suvorovsky, which is an old recipe from a Moscow restaurant that I learned how to make. I use halibut to do that. But I guess you could say that I'm in charge of the soup in my house because my wife is such a great chef that I'd rather be eating her cooking than dishing out mine.
How long does it take to make that soup that you just described?
Well, it takes a few hours. You have to make a fish stock, first of all. And I use usually salmon heads to do that. And you make the stock, and that takes a little longer. So I usually do that the day before you actually make the soup. And then you have to put all the other ingredients together. And I never memorize them, so I just have them written down and go for it. But you poach the halibut because, as you know, the fish of that sort of consistency cooks relatively quickly. So you don't want to overcook it. So you have to make sure that you follow all of the directions properly. And boy, when you finish the product and you enjoy it, it really is something special. Now, borscht, that's another thing. That's beet soup, just a great hearty dish that was part of my growing up and certainly my adulthood. In fact, I just had some yesterday. You pack it up, you freeze it up, and then you've got food for a decent amount of time.
I think I've just been humiliated compared to my marinated chicken and throw it on the barbecue. You've just taken it to a new level for me.
No. There's the real talent to going on the barbecue, Dave. You know that. It's pretty difficult to get the timing right. And I'm getting a little bit better at that. And again, I defer to my wife on that. But I've gotten pretty good at barbecuing up the swordfish. You probably see a couple of those on my social media sites.
What are some of the things that you've been able to do other than the cooking to take advantage of this and maybe use it as a personal growth experience?
Well, one of the things that we've done, obviously, is try to expand our streaming platforms. And we've done that with some historical Sharks games that we're putting out on the Sharks website. And that's been something I've been doing a few times a week. And you go back into the archives and take out all the old production. I put on the very first Sharks game that was ever played, which is a radio-only game for people from the Bay Area, because a lot of people don't remember that that game was not televised to the Bay Area, that first game in Vancouver. So the only way you could get it on broadcast media at that time was to listen to our radio broadcast. And so it was Dennis Hull working with me. That was kind of fun to revisit some of that. And one of the great things that we've been able to do since I've been here since the start of the franchise is we did collect the air checks. So we have the air checks of virtually every game ever played, not quite all of them, but almost. And, they've managed to survive all of these years, regardless of the format they've been saved in. But transcribing that over to digital and making sure that they stream out properly and I'm learning some of the skills of that. And obviously that's the direction that a lot of broadcast is going. What with, for instance, this podcast, right? We've been doing all that. And, already had a handle on that a little bit during the course of time because I'm putting together all the podcasts for the team, too. So that's something that adds to it. But streaming live and making sure you're doing that on that basis and making it work is an interesting experience and something that we continue to work on. So that's one thing. I've obviously done a fair bit of reading and, even away from the sport of hockey. And that's something I like to do because you have to have a good varied background and you never stop learning new things. So, that coupled with some of the cooking exercises we've done here at home, I think that keeps us rather busy.
Hey, you come from back east, Milford, Connecticut, and then you, of course, were the original Sharks announcer. Did you have any idea that when you started this gig 100 years ago that you'd be here forever?
Well, forever's a long time, and it wasn't 100 years ago, but I will say that was the plan. The plan was to move somewhere and to make it my home. And, you never know how that's going to work out, but that was the idea. And I'm very fortunate and proud to say that it has worked out thus far over these years and really enjoy what I do. That's the big thing, is that when you're doing something that you really love, you want to keep doing it. And this is a special team and a great organization. So I can't say that there's any place I'd rather live in the world, let alone the United States. Just a wonderful place to live, even as expensive as it can be. But I just think that it's a privilege, and it's very special to have been able to do that. So how did I think it might happen? I certainly hope that it would, and I hope that it will continue.
Yeah, certainly a blessing for all Sharks fans to hear your broadcast over the years. And you've been a part of so many great moments. In fact, The Athletic had an article a couple days ago about the best Shark teams that obviously didn't win the championship, and most people would point to that Stanley Cup final team. But there are some other great examples. What do you think is a team or a couple that come to mind that, hey, we're so close, we could have done this or this, we'd have been over the top and hoisting the cup?
You know, one that jumps out is the team in 2001-2002, the famous 1-0 loss to the Colorado Avalanche in Game 7. I think that team was good enough to win the Cup. They were really, really tough to play against. They had great goaltending, Nabokov in the goal. And that particular series, they just couldn't beat Peter Forsberg and Joe Sakic, which is, there's no indignity in that. And so they ran into a buzzsaw, really. And at the critical moments, that's just what happened the way it went. I think that the other conference final trips, 04 was the first time that they went to the conference final. They had a chance to do it. They weren't quite there that year, though, I must say. The year they won the President's Trophy, they were the best team in the NHL all season, but they really didn't have a lot of adversity. So I put that one a little bit further in the background. To the other two times that the team went to the conference final, really three, in 10 and 11, when they lost to Chicago in four games, that was a four-game sweep by the Blackhawks, the team that won the Cup. But it was a much closer series than a four-game sweep indicated. I think I remember Antti Niemi, when he played for Chicago, had 45 saves, something like that, in the first game against the Sharks, and that kind of set the tone for the rest of the series. And then 2011, had they beaten the Vancouver Canucks, I mean, that would have been a golden trip, because at that point in time, you may remember that the team that the Vancouver Canucks played to and went seven games against in the final was the Boston Bruins.
Yep.
And that particular year, the Bruins hadn't won the Stanley Cup since they had traded Joe Thornton. So I was imagining if the Sharks had been able to get by Vancouver and played the Bruins in the final, when we landed at Logan International Airport, there would have been 50 cameras surrounding the bottom of our plane waiting for Joe Thornton to get out of the plane. Because, you know, if that ever happened, and it would have happened again in 19 against the Blues when they lost in the conference final, it would have been Joe Thornton against the entire Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And that would have been just an incredible drama to see. So those are probably the teams that I would say have been the closest out of all of the great teams the Sharks have had. But you can't also forget about that first team that beat Detroit and went to Game 7 against Toronto. They ran out of gas because of injuries, and that happened a few times, obviously, with the Sharks in some of these runs, which shows you that you have to be healthy as well as good. But that team also was a very special club, and it would have been really interesting to see if they had been able to get a little further. But I think the physical toll was just too much, which was part of my magic and the real pageantry of the Stanley Cup.
Injury is such a factor in this year's team not making the playoffs, 29-36-5, 15th in the West. But you've got some examples in your life. In fact, I heard you on another podcast talking about, hey, Shark fans, you know, don't give up hope, because 03 they missed the playoffs and they reached the conference final in 04. In 2015, of course, missing the playoffs then reaching the Cup final. So history shows a turnaround is not out of the question in such a short order.
Well, no, and the Sharks have the building blocks to have a great team. They were plagued by a few things this year, not the least of which were some adjustments off the ice. So when I say that, I mean, this was the first year in a number where they didn't have Joe Pavelski as their captain. And I always said that with Joe deciding to move on to Dallas for the twilight of his NHL career, or at least closer to it, this would be the year that they would miss him the most. And that's not a knock on Logan Couture, the captain of the team. And he did a great job. And, you know, but when you take on a responsibility like that, you're also managing, you know, the room a little bit. You're dealing with everything that's going on in the room on a day-to-day basis. You're learning on the fly. And I think Logan did a great job of that. But I always felt that's really where it sort of started at the beginning of the year, where they were reorganizing. Erik Karlsson coming in, signing the big contract. So that meant that they had to part with people like Jonas Donskoy and Pavelski. And so that, you know, didn't help either. And the other part was that the young players that were on the team, they were really hoping would be able to step up, showed that they maybe weren't quite ready for that challenge, with the exception of Mario Ferraro, who I think just stepped right into the NHL and dared everybody to keep him out of the lineup, and nobody could. So those were some of the issues that the team faced during the year, and it's not abnormal to see that happen. But that combined with injuries and obviously the luck that goes with that really didn't help the team put themselves in a position where they were going to be in the playoffs. And so it didn't, you know, surprise me as the season went on that they were having some trouble this year. But looking at the way that the team is built, they've got Brent Burns and Erik Karlsson on defense with Marc-Edouard Vlasic. That's half of the defense. And it's, yes, it's a lot of money in terms of your payroll, but it's also absolutely elite. And realistically, you could say that that was one of the areas where they could have been a little bit more consistent during the course of the year. And they needed all three of those guys to be great every night. And on average, usually one or two of them was, but not all three. And so that was one of the things that they have to improve next year. But they're going to do that because they're remaking some of those guys up front. There's a little extra development with the players on the San Jose Barracuda that got a taste of the NHL. And there's more really exciting young players coming to the organization again that may be an upgrade from what they've had. People like John Leonard, who was the leading scorer in the NCAA this past year. I really liked him in the Sharks development camps. I really like the way that he looks on the ice. He's got a good feel for the game. And I think that maybe with some time in the AHL, he'll probably get a sniff and see what it's like at the NHL level. Or maybe he'll be like his old college teammate Mario Ferraro and dare everybody that he deserves to make the team. And there were a couple of other guys too who played for the AHL team this past year that I think that they hoped would get a few more games, and then they never actually did play any NHL games because they needed more seasoning. But that's the normal stock market ticker of the development of young players such as this. So I think that the Sharks are hoping that they have a healthy year with their veterans and they get back to where they really want to be and then get the infusion of this enthusiasm and talent from the young guys that always seem to find a place in San Jose, with people like Doug Wilson and Dougie Jr. and Tim Burke running the organization with Joe Will in the office. So I think that with the development of these players that are here gives us a real feeling of positive look at this upcoming year.
Best guess, what happened with Joe Thornton?
If I were to guess, I'd say he comes back, just because I'm never going to ever count out Joe Thornton for wanting to play. And my guess is that his love of the game is as great as it was when he was 20. And he's a guy that's got plenty left in terms of being able to contribute. Now, having said that, do I saying that he's going to win the Art Ross Trophy? No. All great players go through this period where they change their role and the way that they contribute to a team. And Joe Thornton will always be somebody that can help with the power play or with developing young players and showing the work ethic and so forth. But he has that fertile hockey mind that I think is so rare. And he's able to use his very copiously talented hands to work with that mind quickly. And I think we were seeing a lot of that during the course of the year at age 40. He's a remarkable player and one of the best that I've ever seen. So certainly one of the best that I've ever had to work with. So if I were a betting man, I'm betting on Joe to be ready to go and wanting to play again.
Why do you think, Dan, the hockey guys, I've dealt with guys in every sport, and I even go back to Kelly Rudy. I love to hang out with him and have him over for a barbecue. Why are hockey guys seem to be more down to earth and real than maybe someone in another sport?
You know, I really think, Dave, that part of it is because of the nature of the sport. Let's face it, it's the ultimate sport of accountability. You're only as good as all of your teammates working together. Wayne Gretzky used to say that too. It's not like other sports where one player can do just about everything. And all you need are a bunch of hard workers around him and then you can win. You really need everybody to work together and pull on the same rope. And so that's part of it. People try to use the excuse of, well, there are a lot of kids in this sport that are Canadian or they're from small towns. I don't buy that. I buy it more from this angle, and that is that it takes a real family commitment for a player to make it to the National Hockey League. You know, mom's got to get up at 4 in the morning, wake up her son, make sure he's got breakfast, make sure they travel to wherever it is he's got to practice and play. And it's not like, playing any sport out in your backyard. I mean, unless you live in a cold weather area. So it's expensive to play, And it's a tremendous family commitment. So ultimately, you need to have that closeness in your family and those values to help you succeed. Now, am I saying it's like that for every player? No, of course not. It's like the rest of society. There are problems and there are differences, and it's not exactly like that. But I just think the general nature of the game lends to that, and people look out for each other, and it's one of the wonderful parts of our game.
Do you think the sport always going to be, you mentioned it costs a lot of money to play? It's not going to be like basketball where all you need is a ball, but something that's maybe more accessible to someone without the funds and the resources to make it happen?
Accessible, but not in a direct way. That's the part that's the learning curve. And what I mean by that is that, you know, all you need, the two sports that are the easiest probably to play are soccer and basketball. And baseball, you could throw that in there too, but you need a field, you need a diamond, you know, et cetera. You can play without that. You could play stickball on the streets of the Bronx if you want, but still, in hockey, the best way to do it, especially in an area like this, is to take a page out of the Mullen family's playbook. And I don't know if you remember the Mullins, Joe Mullen, Brian Mullen, who played for the Sharks. They grew up on the streets of Hell's Kitchen in New York City, in Manhattan. And one day, Emil Francis, who was the general manager of the Rangers at the time, was walking up the street between the pregame skate and the actual game. He was just going out for a walk in the afternoon. And that was at the old Madison Square Garden that was located up on 50th Street around 8th Avenue. And he was just walking up the street in the Hell's Kitchen neighborhood, and he saw these kids out there with roller skates playing hockey. And they looked pretty good. And one of them was Joey Mullen. One of them was his older brother, Tom. And so what he said was, we've got to get these kids on the ice somehow. And that's when the Metropolitan Junior Hockey League was born in New York City. And the Rangers helped fund it. And Joey Mullen became a Hockey Hall of Famer. Brian Mullen played a long time in the NHL. Nicky Fatiu played in the NHL. They all played in that old Met League. And all of that because the general manager of the Rangers was inspired to help in some way. Didn't take away all the costs, but at least he got these kids a place to play. And that's what the Sharks are doing right now with the Solar for America Ice at San Jose with all of the rinks. They're going to build an addition for the San Jose Barracuda. And, you know, they've got the rink in Oakland and the other one in Fremont. So that's what's happening is you have to make facilities available. But you also have to supplement that with, again, the Mullen model. Kids out being out in the, you know, on a street, in the neighborhood or out in a playground using roller skates or just using your sneakers and playing street hockey. And I think, you know, when I was a kid, we didn't have ice everywhere where we lived. So we had to wait till it got, you know, cold enough and to find a place to go out and skate. So we didn't have those opportunities. But in the summertime or even in, you know, out in the driveway of my friend's house, I always remember having a net and having a ball and having hockey sticks and being able to play. And that draws people closer to the game. Having an NHL team also is critical because you're seeing the best in the world at the sport and you're being inspired by that, which I think is, you know, something that sports provides and certainly will continue to do, especially in these times. So those are little things that I think you can do to make it at least a little bit more approachable. But it's a fact of life. You have to have ice and you have to have the proper equipment to play. And that's not getting any cheaper. So that's the hard part. But at least there are ways and there are entry points that are more affordable, starting with roller hockey and moving on with, you know, even street hockey and roller hockey and then getting ahead to programs where there are ways that you can learn the game. You know, at the Sharks rinks, there are ways to do that. There are programs to allow people who don't have the income to learn the sport. So I think those are great things.
You're the best. Some great stuff. I know you got to get going. So get me a doggy bag of your food, and we'll do this some other time. I really appreciate
it. Well, once this COVID-19 thing settles down a little bit, maybe we'll have to have you out. You can barbecue, and I'll make some borscht. How's that?
That sounds like a great deal. Thanks a lot, Dan.
All right. You bet.
Thanks so much to Sharks radio broadcaster Dan Rosenowski and to the I'm Up Coffee Company. Your best cup of coffee hasn't been roasted yet. The executive producer is Hunter Lewis. You can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, YouTube, and iHeartRadio. Your positive feedback and comments, the 5-star reviews certainly help out a lot. We really appreciate it. Thank you so much for listening.